got a heavy-headed gal. I got a heavy-headed gal. I got a heavy-headed gal. She ain't a feeling well when she's been.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Hey, why are we playing Dylan? Oh, I know why. Fenimore Museum in Cooperstown has two major exhibits this summer. They have many exhibits this summer, but we're going to focus on two, and we'll get to the others as well. Remastered celebrates another impressive aspect of music legend Bob Dylan's creativity, his talents in visual art. The other major exhibit features Banksy, best known for creating art on street corners and on buildings unexpectedly. Banksy's work expresses strong political and social statements and is believed to be a driving force behind the street art movement. To tell us about these two exhibits and all the other important stuff going on at the Fenimore Museum, we welcome Chris Rossi, Director of Exhibitions at Fenimore. Hello, how are you? So good to see you.
Good, good. Always fun to be here.
I always look forward to our chats and our conversations. Just how eclectic and cool the things you do at the museum. You seem to be pretty open to most things.
It's one of the great joys of my job is finding different exhibitions to bring in. And meeting different people and wrangling exhibits that might be a little out of the ordinary. So it is. It's great fun.
So how did Dylan come about?
Dylan came about because we have been collaborating for more than a few years now with Pan Art Connections, which is a traveling exhibition firm. They brought us Keith Haring. They brought us Escher, Toulouse-Lautrec way back when. And when we got a call from them that they had a Dylan exhibit of the, I think, only complete 92-piece set of Dylan drawings, we couldn't say no.
So these come from where and in the sense of both in time and in place?
Yeah, this is a private collection that's being traveled. These are they are created from sketches that Dylan made during his never-ending tour, which started in 1988. They probably spanned from then until the 1990s. And Dylan studied art way back when. He studied with a fellow named Norman Rabin, who's making art before them. But in 1974 to 75, he actually took art lessons with Rabin, who was an artist who had a studio and a school up over Carnegie Hall. So you could make your music and make your art, too, at Carnegie Hall. Who knew? And Dylan said that the sketching for him was the way to relieve a restless mind. What he did was later go back and what we call remaster them. He had these drawings, which were done in charcoal and pen, digitized, created into larger prints, enlargements, and then he went back in and he used gouache, which is a water-based pigment, and watercolor to create three distinct sets of these prints. And we have one of those sets on display.
So you get to see the transformation.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's a book called Drawn Blank that's just of the black and whites, and then if you come in and see the work that we have on display, you'll see the color work. And one of the things I like about it, I started to realize as I researched Dylan, and I've always loved his music, is that when Dylan does a concert, he never does the same song the same way.
Right.
Is what I'm, you know, what he said, what other people have told me, sometimes for good, sometimes not, depending on the performance. But these illustrations are sort of the same thing, where he is, every time he would go back in and repaint them, remastering and recreating what he originally started out with.
You have a quote from Dylan that says, "They paint mostly from real life, real people, real street scenes, behind the curtain scenes, live models, paintings, photographs, stage setups, architecture, grids, graphic design, whatever it takes to make it work." Seeing this exhibit in these 92 pieces, do you get a sense of what it takes to make it work for Bob Dylan?
You do. You get a real sense of his love for the road And there's a quote in the exhibit about that as well, basically that the road's not for everyone, but for him it's completely natural. And this is a narrative of life on the road, you know, what his life is like, how it works for him. And within each of those drawings, you get a sense of what he's seeing, who he's encountering. You get a sense of loneliness, connection sometimes. It's really a fascinating portrait of somebody's life.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, Chris, yeah. But I assume that Dylan sells tickets.
You know, I've heard he has.
Yeah. This is a cool exhibit to have during the summer.
Yeah. It is. It's a great exhibit. One of the things we have in the gallery is a guest book, and people are sharing their experiences with Dylan. And the lyrics mean a lot to people. The attending the performances, the experience of being there with Dylan, hearing him, sharing them with other people. It's been really interesting to read those comments and how they translate to what they're seeing in the gallery.
There are portraits and structures and interiors and just all kinds of the subject matters do vary.
They do. And some of the images are things you can think about, or I like to try and connect them to the lyrics. You know, so there are train tracks, there are empty hotel rooms. Mm. And the more I've spent time with the pieces, I'm going back to his teacher, Norman Rabin. Dylan said that Rabin taught him something very important, and that was how yesterday, today, and tomorrow can all be contained in one room. So there's this feeling of timelessness to these pieces. You could be anywhere in time, and then you could spin countless stories or songs out of them.
I just want to go back to give us the timeline. So these go from late 80s into the early 90s.
Yeah, yep. So then he made the sketches, published the book, and then went back in again and remastered them. So that's what we have. You know, blew up three sets of them, painted them, and there was a big exhibit in Germany in the early 2000s that included all of these pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Now, going forward, Dylan is painting, and the paintings are fantastic. You can see them online. I think the Halcyon Gallery in London shows his work. And he's also making three-dimensional work, which is, I think, some of the strongest stuff he's doing. And that's all done with found objects that he's welding together. And they're really terrific. He did a whole train car. He's got a thing about trains and train tracks. And it's fascinating. And you can see he's done these gates, which now appear on a Dylan-endorsed scotch, which goes for a chunk of change. Haven't tried it, but it makes a great cover for the scotch bottle.
Yes, I bet it does.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to think about the modification and the use, the ignition, if you will, of creativity, of how it can be manifested in different ways.
Yeah, and a lot of people that are out there who are musically talented, and it spills over into visual arts as well, and that's interesting.
It is.
Yeah.
Is there a musicality, do you think, to art?
I do. I know there's supposed to be a connection between math and art, but I when I look at certain things, I have music in my head, and I think a lot of people do. I think there's a connection.
I always wonder, I ask this question a lot on the book show with writers, because there's a musicality often to the writing, and if they're listening to music as they're writing.
Yeah.
And it's split. It's about 50-50.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I believe it, and I know painters who listen to music when they're painting. I like to listen to music when I install. I couldn't stop thinking about Dylan's song "When I Paint My Masterpiece."
Yeah,
you know, when we were installing, there's a great video for his Joker Man song, which is just filled with artwork. And then, of course, "Tangled Up in Blue." Apparently, the title to that song came from Norman Rabin looking at one of Dylan's pieces and saying there's just too much blue in that thing. It's all tangled up in blue. And that's where the title to that song came from.
All right. So let's move to Banksy and how this particular show came about.
This is a sort of a follow-up to the herring exhibit we had some years back.
Yep.
And realizing the importance, relevance, and popularity of street art and the opportunity to bring the big rat in was presented to us by one of our supporters, and it was an offer we couldn't refuse. Who wouldn't want a giant 6-foot-high, 7-foot-high rat in their, you know, their gallery? So we went for it. It came to us from Brian Greff, who is the person who saved it. Depending on what you think about taking down street art, we were grateful to have it, and it's now gracing our West Gallery.
It's so there's the one piece.
Yeah, it's a one piece, but it's a really big one piece.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah.
And the Hate Street Rat. So what do we know about the background?
Yeah, so it's an interesting story, and it really is a thought-provoking story. Banksy was in town, I guess, in 2010, out in San Francisco, endorsing or supporting, however he does that or she does it, we don't know who Banksy is, the film Exit Through the Gift Shop, which is right. Kind of fun and mind-bending if you've had a chance to see that. And you're in town, you might as well make some street art. So he did the big rat on the side of a building in the Haight Street area of San Francisco. And apparently San Francisco has a law against graffiti. The piece was going to get painted over. Street art purists would say to you, that's the way it goes. You know, short shelf life, you put something up, it's street art, it's graffiti, it's going to get destroyed, taken down, retagged by somebody else. Brian Greff decided that wouldn't it be nice to take it down, save it, and then make it available so other people could see it. And that's exactly what he did. He negotiated with the owner of the building, and they took the whole wall off, or a good section of the wall off the building, stabilized it, and then went to find a home for it. Now, there's a video called Saving Banksy that talks about the trouble Greff went to trying to find a place to gift it. But things get a little sticky because there's no clear what we call provenance. You know, Banksy's not going to say, I sold it to Greff, so, or, you know, this is my...
Who owns it?
Who owns it? Exactly. This whole thing about who owns it, and museums are loath to take something that you can't really know who owns it. So instead, Greff's been traveling it, and so we've been fortunate to borrow it, and it'll go back to him and then on to another venue.
Okay, so you can always blame him.
Exactly.
It seems to be on boards like you would find on the side of a house.
Yeah, it's on clapboard. It is mightily reinforced in the back. It weighs like 600 pounds. It was quite an effort to get it onto the wall in the gallery, but it looks great. And in compliment, we've got vinyl rats all over the walls in the museum, and we challenge people to find them. And we were inspired to give cats an equal time, so you'll also see a mini cat exhibit downstairs facing the rat exhibit.
Rats and cats.
I know. No fur has flown yet, but you never know.
It is the Haight Street Rat by Banksy and on display at the Fenimore Art Museum. You can find out more by going to fenimoreartmuseum.org. And those are two shows you have, but then there's a lot of other things going on at the museum. One of them being Mark Hom in an exhibit called Reframed. Give me a sense of how you met Mark and this show came to be.
This is one of these sort of serendipitous meetings. I was at the car mechanic outside of Cooperstown. My car had broken down. I had a business trip coming up. I left my car off and hopped into the car driven by Betty, wife of Mike the mechanic. And this fellow got in the back seat with me, and we started to chat and introduced himself as Mark Hom, Danish photographer. And we started talking, and as I say, the rest is history. And what I thought we were starting out with was a very modest little gallery show. But Mark is creative, and he had some out-of-the-box ideas, and we wound up going down a direction that was unexpected with delightful results. So the exhibit, yes, there's an interior little gallery component with about 37 photos of celebrities, everyone from Taylor Swift to Robert Redford to Lauren Bacall. This is downstairs in our lake level in the Great Hall Gallery with the big, beautiful windows overlooking the lake. And what we did was extend the exhibit onto the back lawn where there are now 12-foot high rotating images of celebrities on these sort of twirling big photo stands, two-sided. So 28 images out there. So you're seeing the exhibit in the small and then in this sort of monumental landscape scale as well. It's really quite impressive.
It seems so. We've brought up scale quite a bit this morning.
Yeah.
Talking about size.
Yes. Yeah, I guess we're going big this year. The theme for Fenimore is going big or go home.
Yeah. Yes, but that is, I ask this question seriously, but
yeah.
It fills up a gallery. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, you want it. I mean, obviously, this one has an outside component, right?
So, yeah.
But you're still taking up space, and is that real estate that you could use other way? Like, how do you think of those things?
Yeah, you know, it really depends on the artwork, and this is an interesting juxtaposition because you go from the regular size pieces inside, and then you go outside to this, you know, monumental scale out on the back lawn. We've had some, I think the Haight Street Rat has enough presence that he takes the gallery space well. You know, you get a feeling with the building. And then it's fun to have the little cats and rats on the other side, the smaller, to balance it out. So being able to mix it up is often a nice thing. And you're right, if the work is strong, it's all good.
We didn't mention about the Banksy, but the beret is cool.
Oh, yes, he's the rat's got a little Che Guevara
beret.
Yeah, beret on, which is awesome.
Very cool. The other exhibit is American Masterworks, and I guess this is often what we think of when we think of an art museum.
Oh, yes, this is true. This is
the serious stuff.
The serious stuff that you want to see because it just knocked your socks off gorgeous. I mean, it's beautiful. These are 27 pieces that we were fortunate enough to acquire through the generosity of the Eugene and Claire Charitable Trust. And they run the gamut from late 19th century to early 20th century. Big names like Sargent and Chase and Church and Innes. It goes on and on and on. They are lovely, gorgeous, wonderful to see, so you can get your classical art fix, you know, your serious stuff, and then go downstairs and enjoy some celebrities, some Dylan, and a big rat. It's all good.
And a big rat.
Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. And so overall, Cooperstown is hopping.
Cooperstown is hopping. They've got induction weekend this weekend,
yep.
So it's going to be mighty busy.
Do you get a crossover?
We do. Some people, but most folks really, I have to admit it, this weekend it's all about the baseball.
Baseball is baseball, right?
Yeah.
But it's still people in town, and that's good.
It is good. It is. It's great. And across the street at the Farmers Museum, we've got a new exhibit as well called The Buzz About Pollinators. Come support your pollinating friends, something important for all of us to do. It's well worth seeing and just a delight to be at the Farmers Museum this time of year.
Always fun. For more information, you can go to fenimoreartmuseum.org, fenimoreartmuseum.org. Bob Dylan Remastered, Banksy, the Haight Street Rat, Mark Holm, Reframed, and American and Masterworks, and all of these going through at least Labor Day, if not
just
beyond.
About, yeah.
Excellent. Again, you can find out the dates and find out all about the exhibits by going to fenimoreartmuseum.org. Chris Rossi is Director of Exhibitions at the Fenimore. Chris, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Same here. Just a delight.
Be
Thanks,
well.
Joe.
Thanks so much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.